Funding for this program has been made possible in part by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Good evening and welcome to Education Conversation, an update on Regents Reform. We're coming to you live from the WNED WBFO studios in downtown Buffalo. I'm Jim Ranney. In a moment, we'll hear from State Education Commissioner John King and Board of Regents Chancellor Emeritus Robert Bennett. We will be taking questions from our studio audience. Public school districts in Erie and Niagara counties were invited to send up to three representatives to this event. The rest of the audience is made up of parents from the District Parent Coordinating Council of Buffalo and members of the general public. Since registration exceeded our seating capacity of 300, the audience was selected by lottery. Everyone in the audience has been invited to submit a written question. WBFO WNED staff has collected the questions and are selecting them to ensure we cover a wide variety of topics and to avoid redundancies. I will ask as many questions as time permits, and I will also ask follow-ups in order to get precise answers. This forum is convened by WNED WBFO President and CEO Donald Boswell and Samuel Radford, President of the District Parent Coordinating Council of Buffalo. In full disclosure, Western New York Public Broadcasting receives about 9% of its funding from the state of New York through the Department of Education. Now, before we begin tonight, a quick update on how we got here. New York has joined most states in the nation in implementing the Common Core Learning Standards. The goal is to better define student expectations at each grade level and to better prepare them for college and careers. While the new standards have been praised by some, they have also raised great concern. Critics say tests aligned with the new standards put undue stress on students and put too much emphasis on test scores. Others say implementation of the new standards was too quick, leaving teachers unprepared. Let's begin our conversation by welcoming State Education Commissioner John King and Regents Chancellor Emeritus Robert Bennett. Gentlemen, thank you for being
here. Thank you. Nice to be here.
Let me also quickly say that the weather tonight in Buffalo is, well, snowy to say the least. And I want to thank all the folks in our audience who braved the elements to be here this evening. Others are arriving as we speak. And if the folks at home see some empty seats in the audience, it's certainly not for lack of interest in this topic. It's simply because of the weather. And I hope everyone is careful if they are still heading down here. We are thankful that we're on both television and radio tonight and that folks can join us there on TV and radio. Commissioner King, you've been traveling across the state for the past several months, talking with parents, meeting with school administrators and teachers about the Common Core and other reform issues. You've received an earful on this topic and on this issue. Earlier this week, there was a day of action in opposition to some of these reforms. What do you tell parents and educators, students and others who are concerned about Common Core and the reforms that we're seeing in education?
Well, thank you for the opportunity to be here. Appreciate the station hosting us this evening. Where I'd start is that the Common Core presents a tremendous opportunity for the country. You've got 45 states, the District of Columbia, the Department of Defense schools coming together for the first time around a common vision of the knowledge and skills that are required at each grade level for students to succeed in college and careers. In New York, we know we have work to do to ensure that every student has that opportunity to succeed after high school. Last year in New York State, we had a 74% graduation rate. A quarter of kids after 4 years of high school not ready to go on to college and careers with even a high school diploma. Last year in New York State, a majority of entering students in our community colleges were required to take remedial courses, high school classes for which they and their families paid college prices. So we know, despite lots of excellence in New York, we can do better. The Common Core is a path to doing better, to ensuring that all of our students have the skills they need when they leave us in high school. So part of the work of these forums, these conversations across the state, has been to share why we at the department and why the Board of Regents feel such a sense of urgency about moving the standards forward.
What about what you've heard, though? I mean, you've no doubt heard the concern. You've heard anger in some cases. You know, what are you telling those folks who say, you know what, I'm not sure we're making right decisions here?
Well, there's been a variety of concerns, and also, I have to say, many expressions of support for the standards and real conviction about the urgency of ensuring that all of our students graduate prepared for college and career success. But certainly concerns, and they fall in different ranges. Some are a result of conflating the Common Core with other issues. We haven't added a single test at the state level as a result of the Common Core. Common Core is separate from testing. Now, we have aligned our tests to reflect the Common Core in 3rd through 8th grade, and over the next 4 years, we will align the high school Regents exams with the Common Core. But we haven't added testing at the state level as a result of the Common Core. So sometimes the conversation is focused on local assessments that are given, that local districts have decided to implement or have decided with their bargaining units to implement. And there's an opportunity, I think, for districts to reevaluate those local assessment decisions. Sometimes the Common Core gets conflated with teacher and principal evaluation. They're separate issues. It's important, we think, for teachers and principals to be evaluated based on how they're doing with implementation of the Common Core, whether that's the principal observing the teacher's practice in the classroom, is the teacher asking students to write more, to do more problem solving in math, and looking at student performance. Are students making growth against these standards that will ensure they're prepared for college and career success? But there are lots of local decisions in the evaluation system, and sometimes, again, people conflate those local decisions with the Common Core.
And we're going to talk about a lot of those issues that you raised as we go through this evening. Regent Bennett, you've heard the anger. You've heard the frustration. What are you telling folks, parents, teachers, students?
Well, the first thing I tell parents, starting with my daughter, because my two granddaughters are in 4th and 8th grade in Louport, is to go and see your teacher and ask a couple of questions about whether or not the teacher has benefited from any form of professional development over the last 2.5 years on how to implement the Common Core learning standards. And if the answer to that isn't satisfactory, then you need to go to the principal and find out what kind of professional development was done in this school for my children so your teachers are teaching to the standards and not doing test prep. Having said that, both of my granddaughters have an assessment every Friday just to measure how they did that week. And it's kind of a non-event for them. It's, I'm not even sure they call it a test. So that measuring progress for a child is been going on for a very long, long time. It's when it gets into what do we mean by high stakes and what does it mean for teachers' evaluation that it gets a little confused with the learning standards, I think. So I think the first thing for a parent to do is to ask their teacher of their children what kind of professional development has been done for that teacher.
We've got questions, obviously, from our audience tonight. The first one comes from a principal from Newfane who asks how you respond to critics who contend that reform agenda is a one-size-fits-all approach to change and therefore is not meeting the needs of many districts, especially schools in supportive communities prior to the reforms. Yeah. Is it one-size-fits-all?
It isn't. And again, this comes in part from conflating standards with curriculum. So sometimes people will say, well, because of the Common Core, there's this book that my child read in 7th grade, and that's about the Common Core. No, that's about curriculum. The Common Core lays out a set of standards, things like students will be able to write using evidence drawn from texts. Students will be able to apply fractions to solving real-world problems. Standards are about expectations. Now, curriculum, that's a local decision. And so there's a lot of variety. Certainly some districts have chosen to use curriculum materials that the state is providing, but not all districts have, and that's an option for districts. Professional development is a local decision. We've provided a tremendous amount of professional development as a state over the last 3 years to support the implementation of the Common Core. Just a few weeks ago, we had 1,000 educators from across the state in Albany for a week doing professional development, particularly focused on how to help struggling learners meet the higher standards of the Common Core. But again, professional development, that's a local decision. The evaluation law. Sometimes people will say, well, the evaluation law is one size fits all. But in fact, 80% of the evaluation decisions are made at the local level. So ultimately, this reform effort is about setting high expectations that will ensure our students are ready for college and career success, but then allowing local communities to make decisions about curriculum, professional development, or even the approach to evaluation.
A lot of questions tonight about testing. And the first one on the issue of testing comes from an educator from Buffalo who wants to know why are we assessing students on the new standards so early when other states have chosen to wait?
Again, it's important to lay out the timeline. The Regents adopted the standards in 2010. The first assessments changed for 3rd through 8th graders in spring of 2013. The class that entered this year as freshmen in high school, They'll be the first class to graduate having taken Common Core Regents exams in 2017. That's a 7-year phase-in. Now, are there some folks who say we should have a longer phase-in? Yes. My worry is that each year we graduate another class of students who don't have the skills as writers, the communication skills, the math problem-solving skills. That's another class of students sent off to college or careers without the skills that they need. Now, when I visit other states or talk with educators from other states, what I hear in other states is the complaint that they're asked to teach to the Common Core, but giving assessments that are based on the old standards. And that would have made no sense. So the Board of Regents, I think, made the right decision with the department back in 2010 to a 7-year phase-in and to ensure that the assessments would reflect the standards that we expect to be taught in classrooms.
Are there any other benefits to being first with this or rolling it out perhaps earlier than other states beyond what you just said? Are there financial benefits to doing it or any other reason why the state wants to lead the way here?
Well, the reason to lead the way is because the right thing for students. We want students to have the experiences in the classroom that the Common Core calls for. And again, you know, I've visited nearly 50 schools since the start of the school year. And I'm consistently impressed by the quality of work that I see in classrooms as teachers and students together tackle the Common Core.
Another question on testing, because we received many of them tonight. How many tests are directly tied to Common Core? You addressed this early on, but let's delve into it. How many tests that students now take are tied to Common Core?
Not a single one. The Common Core is not about testing. The Common Core is about standards. Now, we're required in New York State by federal law, a federal law that long predates the Common Core, No Child Left Behind law. We're required to give English and math assessments in 3rd through 8th grade. We're required to give science assessments once in elementary school, once in middle school. We give those in 4th and 8th grade. We're required by federal law to give an English exam, a math exam, and a science exam at the high school level. All of those are required by federal law and have been for nearly a decade. We also in New York give high school exams in U.S. history and global studies. That's part of the Regents exam tradition that dates back to the 1860s. Those are the only required exams that New York State gives. Now, those exams, again, have been in place for nearly a decade. The Common Core hasn't added a single test. Now, so far, the 3rd through 8th grade tests that we give now reflect the Common Core, the standards we're teaching to in our schools. And over the next 4 years, the Regents exams, the high school exams, will begin to reflect the Common Core, starting with the algebra exam this year, which is typically given in 9th grade.
So these tests may become more rigorous under Common Core, but they're not necessarily new tests.
Exactly right.
What happens, another question from the audience, if students in a teacher's classroom refuse to take these state tests?
Well, there's no opting out of state tests in New York State, just as there's no opting out of biology class. The assessments are a part of the curriculum of the school. They're a part of the instructional process in the school. But the reason that students should participate in the assessment isn't because there's a rule about it, but it's because the assessments provide useful information at the classroom level, the school level, the district level, and ultimately at the state level about where students are in that trajectory to college and career success.
I know we'll have more questions, no doubt, as we go on about testing, but Regent Bennett, anything about testing that you want to add? Because it is one of the issues that often comes up when we talk about reforms in Common Core.
Well, some of the complaints that I've heard are that my child is under tremendous stress because he has to get a certain grade on this particular test. I would examine the nature of the stress and who's causing the stress, because I think that I think the days are long gone when you can teach to the test. That is not good teaching. And if teachers have received the training that they're entitled to receive on the Common Core learning standards that have been in abundance throughout the state, and at the local level, in terms of what do these standards look like? Why do we have the standards? What does it mean to teaching in the classroom in terms of how do you know when you reached a standard? Because when the cut scores were made for the 3 through 8 test, 90 teachers spent a week in Albany, and they looked at every single standard for every single grade that appeared on that test, and they asked the following questions. Was it appropriate to the standard? Was it a fair question? Was it a clear question? And then they concluded, what should a child who has been taught to the standards should receive on that? And those recommendations were made in separate groups and as a total group, and sent to the commissioner, and there were no changes.
You are watching Education Conversation, an update on Regents Reform with State Education Commissioner John King and Regents Chancellor Emeritus Robert Bennett. And again, we're coming to you live tonight from WNED and WBFO, our studios in downtown Buffalo. Back to the questions, and this question comes from a community member in the audience from Buffalo. Question about learning standards, and how will Common Core address the issue of less than a 25% graduation rate for minority males?
Mm-hmm. Well, ultimately, there's no silver bullet solution to the challenges we face in education. That said, what the Common Core offers is better preparation at every grade level to ensure that when students get to high school, they're prepared. I'll give you one example. One of the things that the Common Core emphasizes is the development of vocabulary and background knowledge. Well, there's decades of research suggesting that one of the key gaps for our least affluent students is that they arrive at school without having heard as many words as their more affluent peers. In fact, there's a famous Hart and Risley study that showed that less affluent kids arrive at school having heard 30 million fewer words than their affluent peers. And so the Common Core urges us to create language-rich environments where students can develop vocabulary, where they can learn background knowledge, where they can learn about history and science in the early grades, so that as they move forward, they can bring that vocabulary and background knowledge to bear as they improve their reading skills in the later grades. So, again, there's no silver bullet. The whole community has to come together in support of schools. And we need expanded learning time for our students who struggle the most. We need summer programs because we know summer learning loss is a huge challenge for many of our students. We need school systems to engage parents effectively. It's critically important that school systems work with parent organizations like the District Parent Coordinating Council to think together about how parents and schools can support kids who are struggling. Again, no silver bullet solution, but certainly getting the instruction right that students receive in the classroom is part of how we tackle the achievement gap we face in terms of graduation rates, particularly for our young men of color.
Since we also oversee higher education and all teacher preparation programs, we've increased the standards for teacher preparation programs as well, and with a particular emphasis on urban teacher preparation programs so that they have a chance for more clinical experience, and once they get there, they actually have a mentor that takes care of them for the first 2 years in their experience so they don't drop out of teaching. In addition to that, any family support mechanism we can put in place, we should put in place, and I think people in the audience may be familiar with family support centers and the GAP initiative, which is now a Say Yes initiative, to provide the support to these families that are struggling and the students that are struggling from very serious poverty conditions. Nonetheless, they have the ability to learn. There's no doubt about that. But require maybe some more supports along the way, and the community should decide how that's going to look.
Is everything in place for that to happen right away, though? It seems like the standards are in place, the tests are being updated, but are those support systems in place so that these students can succeed now?
Some are and some aren't. I would say that what we're trying to do at the state level is convince the Commissioner of Health and Mental Health and the Office of Children and Families and the State Education Commissioner to do some joint planning, joint funding, and joint assessment of the connection that exists to recognize families as families and make sure that these kids spend a lot of time in school. So if that's the case, then we have to get a system in place. Quite frankly, the best system we had many years ago were community schools, the lighthouse schools, if you will, that they stay open until 9 o'clock and they're open on Saturday. Cincinnati has probably the best model of that, where sometimes in the school there's teaching going on and sometimes in the school there's a whole lot of family support, including health and mental health services.
Question from a school administrator from Wilson. Three-part question here. What percentage of student success do you feel falls on the school system? What percentage is on the student, and what percentage is parent responsibility? School system first.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend who will say about marriage that it's important not to view it as 50-50, but 100-100. So that's a question where the real answer is 100-100-100. Right. Ultimately, everyone who's participating has to be committed to the outcome. Now, that means that educators have to have the mindset that we're going to make every moment of instruction as meaningful as possible. When I was a principal in the high-needs community in Boston, one of my things that I would emphasize to my teachers. We can't control all the things that happen outside of school in our kids' lives, but we can control what happens in the time that they're with us. And we as the adults can create a community that is challenging, rigorous, engaging, supportive. We can create an experience for them at school that's powerful and meaningful. Certainly parents have a critical role to play in helping their children to be successful. We need parents to work with their kids to create a good space to do homework, to support their kids with homework if they can, to create enrichment opportunities on the weekend and the summer, take kids to the museum every now and then instead of the movies, turn off the television, monitor the technology use. We need all parents to be engaged in that way. At the same time, we also know that not every kid has those adults at home, and that doesn't mean we can give up on that. We've got to create, as Chancellor Meredith said, we've got to create opportunities for them to get mentoring from other adults, supports from other adults in the community. And students need to have a vision of what's possible. We just had the PISA results come out that compare performance internationally. And unfortunately, the United States was in the middle of the pack at best. We have a lot of work to do to ensure that our students are ready to compete internationally. We also saw that there are many countries that have moved up in PISA results of late. The United States, not one of those. One of the interesting findings was that students in Shanghai, which is a place that was very high performing on the PISA, students, when surveyed, would say, if I find that something's hard, I know that if I work at it, I can do better. That's the kind of sentiment we've got to develop in schools. We've got to help students see a challenge, a math problem they don't understand, a research project that's really difficult, see the challenge as an opportunity to apply themselves and to work hard, to get better with practice, to get support from the adults in their lives so that they can improve their performance. That kind of growth mindset is critical.
I think this is also a big moment for school leaders, as in principals. I believe it is their responsibility to establish a very welcoming culture for families. And that is more than a parent-teacher conference two or three times a year. It really is that we welcome you, we know you, and we know your child, and we're going to do everything we can to make you feel welcome in this particular school. A number of parents are afraid to go to a school because they don't feel welcome. And that's a culture that has to be embedded in our leadership training programs. I've asked that our folks in the department put 6 credit hours in the agenda for customer service. Because who, after all, is the customer? It's the student and their family. That's why we are doing what we're doing.
Question from a PTA member from the Niagara region tonight. How are you accounting for the fact that children are individuals and therefore do not all learn in the same way or at the same time, and many do not perform well with time testing? Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. Everyone's different and everyone responds differently to curriculum and standards.
That's right. And so we've got to create classroom environments that support all learners. Educators often talk about the importance of differentiation, and that's the idea that you've got to provide a range of learning experiences for students. Some students are going to learn better from the visual example. Some students are going to learn better from reading about a topic. You've got to create a learning environment where students have lots of access points to the content. You've got to create a learning environment where students feel a sense that through their hard work they can improve. Got to create a learning environment where students have a range of opportunities. We were at the BOCES earlier today talking with students from East and Lafayette who are in the BOCES program, and those students were talking about how much the career and technical education experiences have meant to them, how excited they are about participating. So we've got to create a range of experiences, particularly in our high schools, so that students are engaged with school. But we know that when students graduate, they will graduate into a 21st century economy that demands of them readiness. They'll need writing skills, communication skills, math skills. They will need to be prepared to take credit-bearing courses in college or to pursue post-secondary training that will prepare them for a career. So, yes, we've got to differentiate. We've got to support each student. But we can't accept that some students don't need to meet college and career-ready standards. All of our students need to be prepared for success.
I want to just comment on that, because the other place we were visiting today with the superintendent in Buffalo was Lafayette High School, and we saw a classroom of 12 students. It was very clear that some of those students would progress faster than other students, and there were 2 instructors in the room. They knew that extremely well, and the time given to each student differed, And that was a very, very encouraging sign to see. On the career pathway part of it, we are really planning to expand career pathway opportunities as early as eighth grade. So that career readiness is more rigorous than college readiness, quite frankly. And we now have assessments that are very, very good in 13 categories of employment, driven by the employer community. So when a child graduates from a high school in New York State, I want them to know they've got to go on so that they can get a job. And in Rochester, for example, Monroe Community College and a whole series of employers have a compact ready there that have made it very clear to Rochester High School students that if you do these four things, you got a job. And that's very influential.
Question tonight from an educator from Buffalo. The question applies specifically to English language learners. Why are we forcing English language learners who have no prior schooling to take these standardized tests year after year?
So it's a challenge to figure out how to approach assessment for English language learners. I will say No Child Left Behind requires on-grade level testing for English language learners and has that requirement in part as a result of a tremendous amount of advocacy from the civil rights community that worried that before No Child Left Behind, there were states in which English language learners were essentially rendered invisible. Schools that would describe their results and say, oh, we have great results here, but not have any of their English language learners participate in the assessments, particularly in the Southwest. And so the federal government and No Child Left Behind required on-grade level assessment of English language learners. Now, we translate many of our exams in New York State into multiple languages, but one of the challenges is the English Language Arts exam. We have a requirement that after students have been here for more than a year, they must take the English Language Arts exam in English. The Regents recently adopted a budget request to the legislature that would allow us to, for the first time, offer native language arts exams so that a student who has recently arrived in the United States for their first couple of years in the United States would be able to take a literacy assessment in their native language, which will give us the opportunity to emphasize the development of that native language and support eventually of their English language acquisition. But it's a difficult balance to strike because you want to make sure that English language learners are a priority for schools, that they see that they're accountable for helping their English language learners develop their skills academically as well as their language skills.
This is Education Conversation, an update on Regents Reform with State Education Commissioner John King and Regents Chancellor Emeritus Robert Bennett. We're coming to you live tonight from WNED and WBFO in downtown Buffalo. We'll continue our questions with a question from an educator in Marilla tonight. It has to do with special education students, Commissioner. What plans are being developed to accommodate students with severe disabilities to ensure that testing and therefore instructional content takes into consideration developmental abilities and making progress from their current level of functioning instead of imposing unrealistic guidelines?
So you have a similar challenge here, right, of trying to determine for those students what are the right set of expectations. Now, we have a committee on special education process that sets goals for individual students. Again, No Child Left Behind has very specific requirements. There's 1% of students that can take an alternate assessment, more of a portfolio assessment, those students with the most severe disabilities. And then historically, the U.S. Department of Education has allowed states to have another 2% of students take a modified assessment. And actually, the U.S. Department of Education is in the process of eliminating that 2% modified assessment, which was used in some states around the country, not in New York, because of a request from the civil rights community and the advocacy community for students with disabilities who were concerned that that modified assessment was being used as a strategy by some states to not have students with disabilities get the benefit of the kinds of activities and learning experiences that happen in the general education curriculum. What the Board of Regents has asked us to do is to work with the U.S. Department of Education to explore the possibility of a percentage of students above that 1%, but with very significant disabilities, having the opportunity to take assessments at their instructional level rather than their chronological age. But we'll need the permission of the U.S. Department of Education to do that. And again, they'll be struggling with striking that right balance. There are students with disabilities who are achieving at levels that we didn't even know were possible 10 years ago because of the benefits of assistive technology. So it's really important that we make sure that we are very careful about these kinds of issues.
Are the expectations being raised, though, on those special ed students as well, like we're doing with others?
Sure, absolutely. And the key is to provide the right supports. And so as we build curriculum and instructional materials, we're building in scaffolding supports. We don't have enough yet. We need to build more of those. We have regional technical assistance centers that are providing professional development support focused on serving students with disabilities, but it's not enough. We need to invest more in professional development, and certainly I expect that the legislative discussions about the budget that are upcoming will include a lot of discussion around resources for professional development.
We are also looking very carefully at all high schools and all districts about transition planning for children that have been classified, and we want to know specifically, as they're sophomores, juniors, and seniors, what the expectations are after they leave high school, which they're entitled to two or three or four more years, some cases, to complete that. And we are also, just last week, created a special committee to look at higher education to determine how ready higher education institutions are to accept students with special needs or special accommodations that are required. When we did some hearings about 10 years ago, the picture there was not very encouraging. So a lot of these kids have great potential, and they need to be realized.
Questions tonight about privacy, gentlemen, and Common Core and what it means in terms of privacy. A question from a parent from Starpoint. Could you please provide information or directions for parents who want to prevent their child's private information from being released in Bloom? And please explain, first of all, what In Bloom is and what's this concern about privacy?
Sure. Well, let me start with the Common Core and data systems are unrelated to each other. So the Common Core is about a set of standards that have been adopted across the country. Data systems are an entirely separate issue. Now, in New York, we've had a statewide data system for more than a decade. In that data system is information that we're required to collect by federal law, by state law, by federal regulation and state regulation. And we have the opportunity to create what we call parent and teacher portals, in which parents can have secure access to information about their child, and through which teachers can have secure access to information about their students. Now, most of our most affluent districts around the state already have parent portals and teacher portals. Typically, those portals are provided by third-party providers, that is, by companies or nonprofits or regional information centers that are providing a variety of services to districts. Those portals are secure. And one of the requirements under the federal law is that student data privacy must be maintained and that data can only be accessed by those who have a legitimate use for that data in the education process, so that is by the parents or the teachers themselves. Now, what In Bloom is a nonprofit organization that was created to help states and districts to provide these kinds of teacher and parent portal tools in a more affordable way, and to ultimately create the opportunity for those portals to be joined with other data initiatives that states and districts might undertake. So a district, for example, with a parent portal might be able to not only have information that the state keeps, like student test scores, but also might be able to provide parents with information about tonight's homework through that parent portal. But it's important to say that this is a project in which the data are encrypted in storage and encrypted in transfer, which is actually a higher standard than many of the data systems that are in use throughout the state and country. This is a project where data cannot be sold or used for research or marketing purposes. The only purpose of the data in the In Bloom project is to create these parent and teacher portals, which, again, already exist in many of our most affluent districts, but not all districts have access to that resource.
Okay, so again, the notion that this information would be sold or shared by state ed to other outside agencies or businesses, that's not happening.
No, and it's very clear in all of our materials about this and the agreements, but there's a lot of misinformation in social media, a lot of misinformation that's spread through Facebook and other places about this project and about data generally. That said, I do think there's an opportunity as we move into the legislative session to talk about ways that we can even further strengthen data security. Again, not just for data projects that the state is engaged in, but the many data projects that are happening in districts as well.
Question tonight about financing Common Core. It comes from a school board member from the Lewiston Porter Central School District. Commissioner King, are you aware that Common Core has been rolled out at a time of serious cuts to state educational funding? How are you working to ensure that districts have the resources needed for staff development, new curriculum, et cetera?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no question that part of the challenge that we're in as a state is we're simultaneously implementing significantly higher standards to ensure students are ready for college and careers, implementing a new teacher and principal evaluation system that was adopted in law in 2010 and then revised in 2012, and still dealing with the effects of the fiscal crisis of 2008-09. School districts today are still receiving less money, all told, from the state than in 2007-08. So there's no question that creates lots of challenges for districts. At the same time, New York was fortunate to have Race to the Top funding, $700 million, to put towards these efforts. Many of the states that are engaged in the same work on Common Core and teacher and principal evaluation don't have the benefit of Race to the Top dollars to support that work. The state has spent, since 2010, when the board adopted the standards, billions of dollars on professional development, federal dollars, state dollars, as well as local dollars. But there's no question, as you raise standards, you need to provide support. And as I mentioned, I think in the legislative discussions that will be forthcoming, there'll be a lot of discussion about opportunities to invest even more in professional development, even more in curriculum materials so that districts have what they need, technology that might support students' success.
Plus, I think we want to, in this legislative session, make a proposal that higher education has a responsibility here to be helpful to districts. And I know in the case of Niagara University and Canisius, for example, that offer is there for professional development and for training at their expense. I think we'll still continue our network teams through the BOCES throughout the state. I think this is an era where shared services looms large in terms of what can districts do together without merging. That's a very bad word, apparently. But nonetheless, sharing healthcare costs or professional development, technology applications are all there because of the economic necessity. Having said that, I guess I would maybe go out on a limb a little bit, but I'm kind of predicting that 2014 might be a good state aid year.
Mm-hmm. One thing I would add is that professional development, yes, it's about resources, but it's also about what agreements have been made at the local level about time for professional development. Some districts set aside multiple professional development days that they've worked out with their bargaining units before the school year begins. Other districts, teachers arrive the day before kids arrive, and so there isn't that time for additional professional development. Some districts have collectively bargained common planning time every week for teams of teachers to work on planning. Other districts don't have that time. So one of the key questions at the local level is how do districts and bargaining units work together to make sure that there is adequate time for professional development, for collaborative planning, for teachers to sit and analyze student work and determine how they might better support student success.
And in Amherst, the leadership there basically asked the teachers, what do you need and how long do you need it for? And that started in late 2010 in terms of common planning time that they'd already been doing, but they intensified it when the learning standards were introduced. And somehow, some way, they found the time for teachers helping teachers and principals helping teachers. So that's a very important issue, time use, because sometimes one could conclude that the school day is not exactly as long as it should be.
What is state ed then doing? If those are perhaps good practices and they're working in some districts, obviously it's not happening in every district. What can you do at state ed to encourage that it happen, to provide perhaps those resources, again, to make it happen, so that the districts are all coming on together on this? It seems some districts are way ahead of others.
I think it's fair to say there is uneven implementation across the 700 districts. We've provided a lot of resources through Race to the Top and federal Title IIA funding, but we also have a program called the Strengthening Teacher and Leader Effectiveness Grants, where we've invested upwards of $70 million in districts creating opportunities for teacher leadership, where teachers are leading professional development for their colleagues, where teachers who are succeeding in their classrooms with the Common Core are sharing those best practices. We've made curriculum materials available through our engageny.org website as a voluntary resource. That website has had over 40 million page views since its launch. We also on that website have videos of great Common Core practice across the state, classrooms where the Common Core is happening. The BOCES are doing a lot of good work to bring districts together to support good professional development. So it's got to be a combination of the state's work and local work. But again, as we enter the budget cycle, I think you'll hear the regents and the department making a strong case for the investment of additional resources in professional development.
Every state aid request that we've advanced over the last 11 years has asked for and for the most part received a focus for more money for high need districts such as Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, Yonkers, and parts of New York City, and we intend to continue to do that, including more money for professional development.
This is Education Conversation, an update on Regents Reform with State Education Commissioner John King and Regents Chancellor Emeritus Robert Bennett. We're coming to you live tonight from WNED WBFO in downtown Buffalo. Commissioner King, you mentioned Engage New York. A question here tonight from an educator from Williamsville Central Schools talking about Engage New York and some of these resources. The question is, why were early childhood experts not consulted in the development of the materials for Engage New York, since these materials are developmentally inappropriate as written? And then the question, would you be open to having expert teachers revise them in order to allow best practices to occur in early childhood classrooms? Okay. So the resource is there, but this teacher doesn't think they're very helpful.
When I challenge the premise of the question, actually, early childhood experts were involved in the development of the materials, and New York State educators have been involved in the development of the materials. The English language arts materials, actually the K through 2 materials, are being developed with Core Knowledge, which is an organization that has been working on building vocabulary and background knowledge in the early grades for many, many years. There are decades of research on the Core Knowledge approach of building background knowledge. Core Knowledge materials were field tested and demonstrated positive impact on student achievement. For many, many years, folks have seen in the bookstore those books, What Every Third Grader Should Know, What Every Fourth Grader Should Know. Those books were developed by the same folks who developed the Core Knowledge materials. Sometimes people say, well, it's developmentally inappropriate for students to build background knowledge. That's wrong. The research doesn't support that. Actually, the research supports that students should, as in the early grades, learn about the world, and they should participate in read-alouds where they hear texts read that are fiction and nonfiction and support their background knowledge. The Core Knowledge materials emphasize students' development of decoding skills so that they're able to tackle text and able to decode text. That's obviously critically important. Part of the challenge is the premise of the question. But the other piece I would say is, although we feel very strongly that the materials are an incredibly valuable resource, they are optional. It's up to districts to decide what curriculum they will use, and it's up to districts to decide how they want to adapt the materials. And educators in their classrooms, with the support of their principals and school and district leadership, will need to make decisions about what makes sense for their students.
New York was one of the few states in the learning standards to add pre-K, and we were glad to do it, and that was based on an awful lot of pre-K teachers. The sad news about New York State and pre-K that only about 65% of pre-K children eligible are getting funding for such pre-K programs throughout the state. My own opinion is that every four-year-old in the state of New York should have full funding for an enriched pre-K experience so that they get to kindergarten, they're actually ready for kindergarten to have a very, very good experience. And I think there, again, there might be an enhanced role for higher education in terms of how they're preparing teachers and leaders. Some leaders around the state simply don't support pre-K. I can't understand that at all, because the science of the brain is so convincing that's the time really to have the most impact on a child is from pre-K to grade three. And again, I would cite the Windermere Early Childhood Center as a research-based and fun environment for those little ones.
A question about teacher evaluations and how Common Core is used to evaluate the performance of teachers.
Well, the evaluation system has several components. One component, the largest component, 60% of the evaluation, is based largely on observations of teachers by their administrators or by peers as well, depending on what districts have bargained. Those observations are focused on the New York State teaching standards. The New York State teaching standards align very well with the Common Core, a focus on asking questions that will get students to think critically, a focus on student engagement, ensuring that students are actively engaged in their learning. 20% of the evaluation is based on locally selected measures of student performance. So districts and their bargaining units are working on how they will look at student performance for that 20%. And in the subjects like English Language Arts and math and certainly literacy and science and social studies, those locally selected measures should reflect the Common Core. And then there's 20% of the evaluation that's based on what we call state growth. For those teachers who are in grades 4 through 8, ELA and math, which is about 20% of the teachers, we generate a growth score based on how their students grew over the year compared to other students around the state. And that contributes 20% to the evaluation of those teachers. For the other 80% of teachers, those decisions are also made locally. Goals are set for student learning, and an agreement is made about what assessments will be used to assess progress towards that goal. That's a district decision, often made in conjunction with teachers and principals. So those decisions are made locally, but all of the evaluation work should reflect the Common Core. We all want students to think critically. We all want students to have those opportunities to write, to read challenging texts, so forth.
Does the Common Core require the evaluation of teachers, that these tests be used for that?
So it's important to separate. The Common Core is about standards. We have a teacher and principal evaluation law that was negotiated between the State Education Department, NYSET, the Statewide Teachers Union, the governor and legislature in 2010. Unfortunately, many districts were not able to reach agreement to move forward on evaluation. And so in 2012, Governor Cuomo intervened to ensure that we'd be able to move forward on the teacher and principal evaluation work. And today, all districts have a teacher and principal evaluation system in place consistent with that state law. But that's separate from the Common Core. Now, for those teachers who are in grades 4 through 8, English Language Arts and Math, again, that's about 20% of teachers, their students' progress on the state assessments that reflected the Common Core is 20% of their evaluation.
Another question on testing tonight. It comes from a parent. Did not identify the town, but that's okay. Why can't we as parents and teachers see the state tests our children take and an explanation of their scores? This person goes on to say that they've tried to request copies of the test via the Freedom of Information Act, and they were ignored.
So all states have to make the decision about how many test items to release. Some states release none. Some states release a test every couple of years. Some states, like New York, release a percentage of the items. The reason we do that is that the more items you release, the more field testing you have to do. That is more opportunities where students are doing the test as a practice so that you can get information about the test items. We are very committed to trying to reduce the amount of time spent on field testing. So we make available 25% of the items. With those items, we provide the correct answers, the incorrect answers, an explanation of why the correct answers were correct, why the incorrect answers were incorrect, examples of student work at each grade level, guides to the assessments that lay out the criteria used to select every item on the test, the criteria used to select every passage on the test. Districts also get from their regional information centers or data centers item-by-item analysis standard by standard for each student, and can get detailed analysis for that 25% of items that are released. We'd like to be able to release more. We actually have a budget request that we'll make that will allow us, we hope, to print more forms of the test, which will allow us to tackle the field testing problem, hopefully eliminate multiple choice field testing, standalone field testing, embed all of those field test questions in the multiple forms of the assessment, and that would allow us to release more items.
Chancellor Bennett on this?
Well, as reimbursement goes from state appropriations for test preparation in New York, we have 3.5 million students that take our tests. New York ranks pretty low in terms of the state providing funds to prepare tests in the first place. So banking questions is something that is required.
Okay. Question tonight from a parent in Buffalo who wants to know, what does Common Core have for supporting students that are one homeschooled, two on suspension, and three out of school due to a medical condition? Mm-hmm. So let's take those one at a time, homeschooling.
Well, one of the great opportunities with the Common Core is that you now have all states, virtually all states, 45 states, working together to produce materials that will support student learning. And so there's a growing collection of resources around the Common Core, many of which are free resources, including the full pre-K through 12th grade curriculum that we're developing at the state level. And those materials can be accessed for free by families that are homeschooling or by those who are charged with providing instructional support for students who are suspended or who have severe medical needs. But again, the key will be professional development for those who are charged with supporting those students who are suspended or who have those severe medical needs so that they can adapt the instructional materials, whether it's the ones the state has provided or ones that a district is providing.
Mm. Yeah. Certainly in higher education, online learning has exploded in the last 5 years. And that may be a good thing or not such a good thing. But in terms of the P-12 system, and particularly high school, online learning is inevitable, I think, in terms of accessing the Internet for instruction and guidance and so on and so forth, and that might address part of that question. But as a separate item in terms of technology applications and the readiness of a student to use the technology is way down the road. I mean, I think students, I know my fourth grade granddaughter told me how to use the iPad. I said, what are all these icons? And she said, you only have to worry about one. I said, which one? She said, it says mail. That's it. You don't have to worry about anything else, and that's all I worry about. Point made, online learning is coming to P-12.
Question again tonight from a parent in Iroquois, and it has to do with testing. This parent writes that my daughter will enter kindergarten in the fall of 2014. While this should be an exciting time period and transition for our family, my husband and I have become increasingly concerned at the curriculum and testing that awaits their daughter. What do you say to taxpaying parents who are strongly considering opting out of the system?
Well, a few things. One is there are no state tests in kindergarten. But, of course, as the Chancellor Maris described, kindergarten teachers will have assessments to measure whether or not students are making progress. And those assessments often will be performance-based, where a teacher may sit with a student to look at a book together, to get a sense of the student's familiarity with letters, early reading skills. Teacher may sit with a student to do math work together, get a sense of their number sense, their knowledge of shapes and colors and so forth. So in the early grades, those decisions about assessment and curriculum are made locally. I would encourage the parent to talk with the local school district about how they approach assessment in K through 2 and how they approach curriculum in K through 2. The assessments that we give, as I've described, in third grade all the way through 11th grade are the ones that are federally required, except for those two high school history exams, and have been for a long time. The key is that the tests shouldn't define the instruction that students receive. The standards should define the instruction that students receive. And we do worry that test prep and more testing than is needed may be occurring in some schools and districts around New York and around the country. And I think we've got to work collectively as an education sector to make sure that we have the minimum amount of testing necessary to inform good decision making.
Do you think we have too much testing now?
Again, it varies tremendously district to district. We have a set of state tests that are required by federal law, but beyond that, districts are making those decisions. Are there some districts that have too many assessments? Yes. Is that true of every district? Absolutely not.
Would you support one number, a standard, for all New York schools? Yes, the federal ones have to be there. They're required, and we also recommend this and no more.
No, because each district and school needs to be able to make those decisions. I think that element of local control around curriculum, around assessment, around professional development is important. That said, I think you'll see, moving forward into the legislative session, a lot of discussion about how we might constrain, perhaps, some of those choices in K through 2 so that in those early grades, people are focused on more of the performance-based assessments that I was describing rather than standardized tests, which obviously we don't have as a state in K through 2, but some districts may be using.
Chancellor Bennett.
Pearson Education under investigation. Why won't you talk about the subpoenas and the investigation? It's been going on for 3 years now. Search New York Times. Pearson Education under investigation.
Mr. Bennett, you can continue on, please, if you
Pearson
would.
Education.
We apologize for the disruption. That's okay. Yeah. You were talking
Pearson
more, though, about the.
I would advise.
Not a loud voice. I would advise that parent to meet with the teacher and to find out whether that teacher is certified in early childhood education. And I would ask the questions, what's your approach to assessments for my child and how frequent are they going to be? And what are you going to learn from it? How is that going to help my child learn more? And what can I do to help at home? But the first thing is, are you certified as an early childhood teacher?
In terms of what you're often hearing from parents and from teachers and from students in some case, a lot of stress, in some cases a lot of fear about Common Core and these new standards. What can you tell people who are, looking at these new requirements fearfully and with great trepidation?
Well, a couple things I'd point them towards. One is, got to make sure that we focus on the standards, and I would encourage folks to actually read the standards and the kinds of things they ask students to do, and I think they'll see that the standards are asking for exactly the kinds of skills that students need for later success. Two, I was in Massachusetts. I was a teacher in Massachusetts when they dramatically raised their standards in the mid-90s, and they heard many of the same concerns that we hear today. They heard people saying the standards are too high, the tests are too hard, our kids will never be able to meet these higher expectations. And in fact, Massachusetts remained resolute. Today, Massachusetts is performing at the top of the nation on the NAEP assessment, which is the gold standard for comparing performance across states. So it is possible to have students achieve at a higher level. In fact, the Board of Regents heard similar things when they began the phase out of the local diploma. People said graduation rates will plummet. New York students will never be able to meet a higher standard. And in fact, graduation rates have gone up with the phase out of the local diploma. So New York State educators have demonstrated that students can meet higher standards. The other observation I'd make, we just had the NAEP results, again, the gold standard for comparing performance across states, come out. The two places that had the largest gains on the NAEP, in contrast to New York, which has been essentially flat for a decade, the two places that had the largest gains were the two places that are ahead of us in the work on teacher and principal evaluation and are doing the work on the Common Core, Tennessee and the District of Columbia. They saw very significant gains because they are working towards a higher set of standards. They are using teacher and principal evaluation as a tool for support for teachers to ensure continuous improvement of the instruction students receive. So, anxiety is inevitable when you raise standards, but I would encourage folks to remain hopeful and to look for good things to happen in classrooms.
Mr. King, thank you very much. Regent Bennett, thank you very much. We're going to take a short break here because this will bring our television broadcast to an end. We want to thank Commissioner John King and Regents Chancellor Emeritus Robert Bennett for joining us. We also thank Samuel Radford of the District Parent Coordinating Council of Buffalo and everyone in our studio audience. And we want to thank you for watching at home. Our program will continue live on WBFO 88.7 FM and WBFO.org in just a moment. For now, I'm Jim Ranney. Good night.
Funding for this program has been made possible in part by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Hi, I'm Rick Steves. For 30 years, I've been eating my way through Europe, and I can say with authority, Europeans are expert eaters. The catch of the day in Greece, the wines of Burgundy, the best of the verst, and gourmet tapas. Join me as we savor Europe's finest cuisine on Rick Steves' Delicious Europe.
Friday night at 10 on WNED. Friday night at 8 on WNED.
There is a lot of drama in store for the Crawley family, their servants, and many exciting new characters in season 4. Just you wait and see. I'm Susan Sarandon. Please join me for Return to Downton Abbey.
Tonight at 9:30 on WNED.
Education Conversation, an update on Regents Reform. Welcome back. I'm Jim Ranney, and we are with State Education Commissioner John King and Regents Chancellor Emeritus Robert Bennett. We're coming to you live from the WNED WBFO studios in downtown Buffalo. And again, our television broadcast has ended for now, but we are continuing on 88.7 FM WBFO. And Commissioner King, let's get back to questions from our audience here tonight. And our next question comes from an educator in Buffalo. It has to do with teacher evaluations again. We've talked a little bit about this. The question about implementing the Common Core at the same time as teacher evaluations has led to confusion and jeopardized Common Core implementation. Would you consider stepping back on evaluations until all of the major issues are worked out and so the Common Core can be more effectively implemented and embraced?
I think the question creates sort of a false choice. Should we move forward with the work of higher standards for learning but ignore our standards for teaching? I think that's a false choice. What we've seen when we are in districts like Amherst is that districts can very thoughtfully integrate the work on the Common Core with the work that they're doing on teacher and principal evaluation. When principals are observing, they should be looking for the kinds of shifts in instruction that the Common Core requires. They should be looking for the kinds of questions that the Common Core requires, like asking students to support their ideas with evidence drawn from the text. When we are looking at student growth and how students are doing on assessments, we should be using growth on assessments that reflect the Common Core, what we know are the standards that will help the students to reach college and career readiness. So the key is to integrate that work. That's what Tennessee and D.C. are doing. Again, those are the two places that saw the largest NAEP gains.
I think it's a matter of policy for the Board of Regents to continually ask questions of the commissioner and his staff about continuous improvement, understanding of the standards, identify those districts that have really, really done an outstanding job in explaining the standards to their teachers and with their teachers, and most importantly, have had really a series of information nights for parents and actually read the standards at every single grade level in math and English so that people understand these are standards and these are expectations of what a child should know at the end of third grade, and obviously then during third grade and fourth grade and all the way up through. And I think as a matter of any delay in the teacher evaluation is a state legislative issue because that is a state law.
And that would have to be taken up then, you're saying, at the legislative level.
Absolutely.
Okay. Question tonight from a educator and a parent from Fredonia about testing, specifically in grades three through eight. This person wants to know why the tests need to be so long, spread out over 3 days. Why not go back to the way it was in 2005 and have 2 days, or better yet, just 1 day of testing?
Mm-hmm. Well, whenever you look at a testing system, you're trying to balance different decisions. Sometimes people say to me, we need assessments that require a lot more writing. and a lot more problem solving in math, and we also need them to be shorter. We actually can't have both. If you're going to ask students to read challenging texts and write with evidence drawn from those texts, they're going to need time to read the text and to write their essay. If you want students to not just bubble in an answer for a math question, but actually to write out their work and explain their mathematical reasoning, that's going to take some more time. Now, our assessments are generally 50 to 70 minutes each of those 3 days for English language arts, or those 3 days for math. And we were asked by educators across the state to give students the possibility of more time so that students wouldn't be rushed to finish. And so we extended the time to 90 minutes in the upper grades so that students would have more time to complete their work.
But it's still a 70-minute test.
That's right. But the test itself, exactly, as Chancellor Maris points out, the test itself is anywhere from 50 to 70 minutes of expected work time, but we have that extended time. Now, some states have untimed tests. Massachusetts, for example, doesn't have a time limit at all on their assessments. But the challenge there is that then some students will work far longer than necessary. So the balance we try to strike is to set a reasonable amount of additional time. In the lower grades, the time is less, more like 70 minutes total with 50 minutes of questions. In the upper grades, a little bit more. We've actually lowered the amount of time for the tests each of the last 2 years, and we'll continue to make adjustments as we move forward. But the key is you're always trying to balance these competing priorities. We want to make sure that our assessments aren't just multiple choice tests, that they have those opportunities for students to write and demonstrate their problem solving.
Question about finances again. It comes from a school board member, did not identify the district. The financial impact of implementing Common Core, is there a number? Has the district or has the state education department figured out what it costs or what it's costing the state to implement Common Core?
Well, it very much depends on the district. There's state funding for textbooks and software purchases. So did districts begin in 2009 or 10 to orient those purchasing decisions towards materials that reflect the Common Core? Did the district have in place a curriculum that already reflected the skills that are emphasized in the Common Core? Did the district use its Title IIA professional development dollars, or its Title I professional development dollars, or its IDEA professional development dollars to support professional development around the Common Core? Or did it use those dollars? Did the district use those dollars for some other purpose? So it's very variable. But that said, we worry about our highest needs districts, particularly some of our poor rural districts that have very limited resources, declining enrollment, may not have the staff committed to professional development work. And so we're providing resources at the state level, but we also, as we move into the legislative session, will ask the governor and the legislature to consider even supplementing further the resources that are invested in professional development.
Question from a parent in the Buffalo Public School District. What will our society do with the large number of students who are unable to meet Common Core standards?
Mm-hmm. Well, the challenge is, what do we do now? Right? As I described, we have a quarter of our students at the end of high school who are, after 4 years of high school, aren't even getting a high school diploma. We've got a majority of students in our community colleges entering and required to take remedial courses. We've got many community colleges around the state with six-year graduation rates below 25%. So we see that today. What the Common Core is about is, how do we change instruction at every grade level so that more students are prepared to graduate and prepared when they graduate to go on and be successful in college and careers. So the societal challenge is, how do we close our achievement gaps? How do we ensure that more students have access to rich learning experiences during the school day, and then those wraparound supports that the Chancellor Emeritus described?
But don't you think in the short term, at least, as we implement these new standards, that those numbers are going to go up, that the number of students not being able to meet these new standards, at least short term, may increase?
Well, at the high school level, with the Regents exams, students pass at a 65, which represents basic knowledge. But we know that a 75 or 80 reflects college and career readiness. 75 or 80 much better predicts student success when they get to college and credit-bearing courses. And so that will continue. Regents have talked in their recent meetings about maintaining those two standards, one that reflects a basic level of knowledge, one that reflects true college and career readiness. As I mentioned, we have a graduation rate of about 74%, but our college and career ready number, the percentage of students who after 4 years of high school are performing at a level in English and math where they're ready for credit-bearing college coursework, is more like 35%. So we have that gap. We've got to close that gap. Now, the Common Core isn't creating that gap. The Common Core is a way to close that gap by changing instruction at every grade level. But we don't expect the change in the Regents exams to negatively affect pass rates or graduation rates because we're going to continue to have those two standards, one at basic level of skills and one at a college and career-ready level.
Chancellor Emeritus Bennett?
I think we'll see better performance overall as soon as we get to choices for students as early as 7th and 8th grade on program selection, particularly in applied learning. We've seen enough evidence of kids that are in applied learning courses. We saw it today at BOCES, where they're excited, they're happy to be there, they're learning at great levels, and if we can increase the number of credit hours and therefore the graduation rates for those kids that are getting career ready, then we'll see greater overall success for our students. Right now, there's not enough credit and programs given or provided as a choice for those kids, and I think if we can do that, they will take the choice and they will do very, very well, and they will be employable and probably get the message that maybe I need to continue my education a little bit more. So we're not there yet. We need to do that. We need career pathways as a top priority of the chancellor.
Question from a school administrator in Buffalo. As a high school principal, I fear that the tests have the potential to do harm to students who will be denied diplomas with the new system rolled out too quickly for teachers and for students to have time to prepare. Are you willing to engage more stakeholders in the process?
Stakeholders are very engaged in the process of developing. We're very involved in the development of the standards, very involved in the development of the curriculum resources that the state is making available, very involved in the development of the exams themselves, and very involved in the standard setting for those exams. So educators from across the state play a key role in every aspect of the Common Core standards, curriculum, and assessment process. That said, as I mentioned, because the regents are going to maintain the basic standard and a college and career-ready standard, we don't expect the change in the regents exams to affect graduation rates. That said, we know that students who are graduating just with 565s generally aren't as prepared as they need to be to succeed in college. At a couple of the forums this week that I did in New York City, parents offered very compelling comments about their own experience, having attended schools where they thought they were being prepared, graduating, going on to college, and then getting to a college campus and being told, no, no, you can't be in this college class. You've got to go to this remedial course. And we know for every additional remedial course a student takes, that student is less likely to graduate. So ultimately, the Common Core isn't widening that gap between the basic level and the college and career-ready level. It's actually a strategy for closing that gap.
I'll go back to this because it's been brought up several times again about the implementation and how quickly it appears the state is moving. Do you think it's been rolled out too quickly?
I have to say, I truly have the opposite worry. We have a 7-year phase-in of the Common Core. This year, today, right now, there is a student on a community college campus in this region who's thinking about dropping out when that student goes home for the holidays, because that student is taking remedial courses and sees graduation receding into the distance. So the worry in education isn't about moving too fast. My main worry is that we're moving too slow. The March on Washington, we just celebrated the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. In New York State last year, the graduation rate for white students, 85%. The graduation rate for African American and Latino students, 58%. That's worth saying again. 85% for white students, 58% for African American and Latino students, 50 years after the March on Washington. Again, I don't worry about us moving too fast. I worry more that we need to move more quickly to ensure that all of our students have access to the rich instruction that will get them ready for college and career success.
And I don't argue with you that we want the results sooner rather than later, but was everything in place? Are you convinced all the tools, all the resources were in place for this rollout?
Well, again, this is not a one-year process. This is a process that's going to happen over 7 years. And when we get to 2017, I'm confident there'll be more work to do. So no one would argue that every teacher has all of the supports that we would ideally want. Do some teachers in some districts have more supports than other teachers in other districts? Yes. And that's a gap we've got to close. But that's not just about the work at the state level. That's also about a whole series of local decisions. As I mentioned earlier, there's a district in this region that has multiple days of teacher professional development before the school year begins. And they've used those each year to prepare for this transition. That's a local decision made with their bargaining units. Other districts, the teachers come back the day before students start. There was one district that a couple years ago was about to have the teachers come back on the same day as students. So we've got to rethink how we organize time in schools. We've got to make sure there's time for professional development. We've got to make sure there's more time in the school day for those students who struggle. So there's many things we need to do to improve the tools and resources over time, and we'll do that work. But that doesn't mean we should stop. That doesn't mean we should abandon the aspirations, and it certainly doesn't mean that the answer is lower standards and lower expectations.
I would say, to answer your question about too fast, is that some districts didn't wait for the state. They went ahead and figured out, everybody got the standards at the same time. And some districts said, let's really review these together. Let's figure out the best way to implement them and proceeded. Other districts waited and came to more training and used more of the guidance that was available from the state. Other districts waited way too long and said, everything isn't out from the state yet, so we have to wait. That third category, we really need to know who they are and whether other districts can help them get up to speed. I would be hard-pressed to tell a district that is doing it full steam ahead now to wait. I can't imagine what they would say to me.
I'll remind our audience that this is Education Conversation, an update on Regents Reform with State Education Commissioner John King and Regents Chancellor Emeritus Robert Bennett. And again, we're coming to you live from the WNED WBFO studios in downtown Buffalo. Back to the questions from our audience. Grand Island, a school administrator there, has a question about, communication, I guess. As teachers and administrators, we are often contacted by frustrated parents who express concern that their children are being used as guinea pigs to test out this new curriculum and the new standards. What advice do you offer school educators in their efforts to effectively communicate and convince parents that their children will benefit from the new standards?
Well, the best way to show the benefit is to give parents a sense of how instruction is changing to reflect the Common Core. When you're in a classroom and you see students talking about their mathematical reasoning and the level of excitement that students have about math problem solving, when you're in classrooms where students are excited about the text they're reading and the discussions they're having, it's very hard to argue with the Common Core work. Last year I was in this region, I was in a classroom of fifth graders who were reading the book Esperanza Rising, which is a fantastic book that's part of the curriculum materials that the state makes available as a resource. And I asked students, how is instruction this year different from last year? This was last school year, where that district had just started to implement those materials. And the students said, well, last year we would just read a book and write a book report at the end. But now we have to use evidence from the text to support our ideas in our discussions and in our writing. And then a second student said, yeah, and to do that, you have to really read every page of the book closely, right? And then, at that point, I wanted a video camera to capture that conversation. But the best was the third student who said, and you know, the books are better that way. Right, and it's true. The books are better when you savor the words that the author chose. That's why the author wrote them. That's why the author produced that work of art, is to share a set of ideas and experiences with the reader. That instructional experience, that's the answer to the parent concern about the Common Core, is to say the Common Core isn't the thing you read about on social media. It's not the thing you heard on Facebook. The Common Core is about instruction that is engaging and rigorous and will prepare your child for college and career success. The other example I'd share quickly, I was in Mineola on Long Island a couple weeks ago, and students told me about an experience they had where their teacher had decided that many parents had questions about the math homework. So the teacher started recording a video, a 1 minute, 2 minute video on her iPad that she would post on the district's website, where she would explain the first problem of the homework. So you could see on the screen the teacher doing the problem and hear her narrating solving the problem, the mathematical reasoning to solve the problem. Well, parents loved it because then they could help their kids more easily with the math homework. So then other teachers in the school started doing the same thing. And then they agreed to alternate. So every teacher on the grade level was alternating, doing those little short videos, minute and a half. Parents felt it made the math curriculum much more accessible. It reduced parent concerns about the shift in math curriculum. But the best part was the students who were describing this to me then wanted to show me the videos they had made explaining their mathematical reasoning because they liked being able to narrate solving a math problem and they were excited to share it. So, look, there's always going to be anxiety and frustration when there's change. But the state, districts, parents, we all have to work together to make sure everyone has good information about what the Common Core is. There's an opportunity at the school level and the district level to engage parents very meaningfully in dialogue about how instruction needs to look for students to succeed in college and careers.
Regent Bennett?
We really need to have a lot more parent information nights to explain the standards in English and mathematics at each grade level. And you can't do it once a semester. You have to do it frequently. You have to stay there until all the parents' questions are asked and answered, because I think that the lack of communication creates anxiety, and that's not a good thing. When we visited Jamestown High School, we went into the junior year class of the video room, where they plan and do videos and do the student announcements and make videos of their friends in terms of lessons and so forth. And I said to them, do you think you could ever put together a video on what the Common Core learning standards are, first of all, and how your teachers are using them? And in the middle of January, they're going to send me the video with that job accomplished. They're in a career pathway, number one. And number two, they're doing something terribly relevant for the people in Jamestown.
Question tonight from a Buffalo parent on testing. Again, by far, I think that the biggest topic tonight is questions regarding testing. What do you say about 30% of some grade levels at City Honors, one of the best schools in the nation, not meeting either the reading or math standards? Would you consider this a manufactured crisis? Goes on to say, I doubt 30% of any grade level at City Honors could not be considered not college and career ready. So if that's happening, that would suggest perhaps It's not the students, it's the test.
I'd make a couple observations. Last year on the 3rd through 8th grade assessments, the proficiency rate in New York was about 31%. Our NAEP scores, which we just got back, the gold standard benchmark for student assessment across student performance across states, our proficiency rate was about 35%. I mentioned earlier the percentage of students who are graduating college and career ready, that is the percentage of students who started high school 4 years earlier and are prepared to do college-level credit-bearing coursework, it's about 35%. So when you've got multiple data points all confirming the same point, one strategy is to say, well, the standards are too high, the tests are too hard, we should have lower standards and lower expectations. Another strategy would be to say, how do we work together to ensure that more students have the skills that they need? Now, at City Honors, are there students who are higher performing and students who need more support? Of course. One of the things that's striking is, as you look across the colleges in the state, how many students struggle when they get there. Even in our four-year institutions across the state, our graduation rates have been essentially flat. We need to do a better job preparing our students to succeed. Now, the assessments are one piece of the puzzle. No one would argue that we should make decisions about student performance or educator performance based on one measure. So how students do on assessments, that's part of how we look at how students are doing at a place like City Honors or any high school. But we also need to look at how students are doing in their coursework, on the assessments that their teachers have developed, in those learning experiences that might be hands-on projects and performance-based assessments. We've got to look at all of that.
There isn't the strongest communication these days between and among higher education and our district high schools. And in some cases, it's pretty good, early college opportunities and so forth. But one of the things we're asking for higher education folks to show us and give to us are the assessment that they use to make a decision to say to a student, you can't take college-bearing courses yet. You've got to go to remedial programs. We want to see that test, and we want to compare it to our high school assessments and to see if there's a total inconsistency or some relationship. Because I think the sooner that kids in high school can get a taste of what college is really like, the better. And so we have the benefit as a Board of Regents to oversee higher education and the P-12 system. So we think there has to be much more serious planned collaboration and intend to ask the legislature to help us make that happen. I think the P-12 system would be very grateful for that. I hope they would.
Yeah, one example of that in the Common Core is that we know that the placement tests given in New York and around the country in English Language Arts typically emphasize students' ability to read nonfiction texts. They want to know, are students going to be able to tackle the texts that they'll need to read in a psychology class or a sociology class or in the chemistry class? And unfortunately, historically in our K-12 system, we have underemphasized students' ability to read and analyze nonfiction texts. And so the Common Core asks us to do a lot more reading and to attend to nonfiction texts alongside fiction texts, not to diminish the virtues or value of literature and poetry and drama, but rather to say students need to be reading a lot more in English class and in history class and in science class, and they've got to graduate prepared to tackle challenging texts that are fiction texts as well as nonfiction.
Question here from, I will say, it sounds like a frustrated parent from Alexander regarding standards and one of it, question about textbooks. And when will students receive books based on the Common Core? And, will the Board of Education be paying for internet in my house since my children were told to get online for further instruction? I mean, that could be a real problem for homes that aren't internet, don't have internet access.
Yeah.
I mean, have the books been updated? Simple question.
There are lots of resources that say they reflect the Common Core. Some do, some don't. And every district has to be very careful about the decisions they make about the curricula that they choose. But those are local decisions. Districts decide what books to buy, what books to read, what math problems to do, what math textbook to use, what science textbook to use. Over time, the materials will get better, partly because we've got now 45 states all working on the same thing. So over time, I do believe that the materials will continue to get better. But textbook decisions are a local decision that parents should talk with the school district about the curricular materials that the school district is using. Many districts around the state are looking for ways to move away from textbooks and towards moving those kinds of materials online. We have a number of districts, some high needs, some more affluent, that are looking for opportunities to have students have their materials on computer or on tablets, and that's coming, even for our most challenged districts. And so over the next decade, we've got to be thoughtful as a state about how we ensure that all districts, regardless of their local resources, are able to invest in technology. And one of the things that the board proposed to the legislature that they changed was to allow greater flexibility for districts as they use their textbook aid and software aid to also be able to use textbook aid to support software purchases so that the districts are able to tackle bridging this digital divide. But no question, we need the help of the federal government and the state to make sure that students have the technology resources that they need, that districts have the technology resources they need. And finally, I'd say about the issue of internet access at home, this is one of the reasons in high-needs districts we need extended learning time. We need students to be able to have access to computers during the school day and after school, to be able to get their work done after school. We also oversee libraries in the state. That's another great place for students to do their work.
In terms of the testing and also earlier you had stated that there were no Common Core exams. A question just came in from someone in the audience who didn't want to identify themselves, but they said that they received an email today from a gentleman, I won't use that name, regarding the new exam, the new Common Core exam. So you're saying there's no Common Core exam, but there's obviously people out there that feel that they're getting information about a Common Core exam. There's a lot of misinformation here.
There is. Just to be very clear, the third through eighth grade assessments that New York State gives that are required by federal law now reflect the Common Core. Over the next 4 years, the Regents exams that New York State gives today, 3 out of 5 of which are required by federal law, will reflect the Common Core. So those are exams that reflect the Common Core, but they're not exams that were added because of the Common Core. There's no new Common Core exams on top of the exams that are required by federal law or by the Regents graduation requirements.
Based on the new standards versus the old standards.
Question about testing. Again, we'll continue with those questions because there are so many of them. Not only are students and children tested at a reading level 2 levels above their grade, the questions are often written in a deceptive manner using deceptive wording with no scientific basis for this. Why is the state doing this to our children, I guess, in terms of testing?
Yeah.
And the style of the testing?
Ken, this is a point of, I think, misinformation that folks have about the assessments. The assessments go through a very extensive development process that involves New York State educators at every level. Every question is field tested, that is, it's administered to students to see how students do before the question is added to the test. Now, the Common Core requires that students read much more carefully. One big difference between Common Core aligned assessments and the old assessments is that sometimes in the old assessments you could guess the answer without having read the passage. There was one answer that was so obviously right and 3 answers that were so obviously wrong that you could answer the question just from looking at the question without reading the text. What the Common Core requires is close reading of text. You've got to pay careful attention to the words that the author chose, the argument that the author is making or the story that the author is telling. And that may require you to go back to the text. And if we all think about our best reading experiences, we were paying close attention to the words the author chose. When we think about the challenging reading that we might have to do in a science course or in a technical job, you've got to pay careful attention to the words the author chose. The sequence matters, right? Although is used matters. It affects the meaning of the sentence. And so students have to attend to that. So are the questions more challenging? Absolutely. Are there plausible distractors? That is, might there be in across the 4 choices some answers that are plausible but not right? Yes, because what we're trying to get at is students' careful attention to the text, whether they really are comprehending the text, not whether they're sort of gaming the test. Which was much more possible on the test before the Common Core standards.
The Professional Standards and Practices Board, which is primarily teachers, continually challenged to look at all this. And I think that the criticism has come in to many of my colleagues and to the department about grade-level questions being for fifth graders at the seventh grade level, or for third graders at the fifth grade level. That of course, is worthy of a real serious look-see. And we don't believe that's the case, but it's a question that's been raised, and we have a system in place to take a look at that again as the further tests are developed.
Yeah. And this is part of what it means to raise standards. The Common Core does require more at each grade level. In the recent PISA results, the International Comparison of Performance, one of the findings was that our international competitors are often 2 or more grade levels ahead of us. That's the challenge. We've got to figure out how we build a bridge between where our students are and the higher expectations of the Common Core.
Again, I think that kind of goes back a little bit to teacher preparation programs, and we have several hundred of them in the state of New York, and one of the New York City schools that came to the Regents meeting 2 months ago was saying that their hiring practices for a math teacher, they thought it would be a good idea when they had 5 finalists for the math teacher in fourth grade to administer the fourth grade math assessment, and 3 out of 5 didn't pass. So the necessity for higher education and the necessity for more professional development based on the learning standards is very apparent and very needed, and we're going to ask for more money to do that.
When you talk about testing, and I understand that if a child is entering kindergarten and the Common Core standards are going to be in place from day one all the way through high school, that they may do well with Common Core and adapt to it well. But what do you do with a scenario of a student who is now in eighth grade, taking an eighth grade assessment test in one of the subjects, who has not received curriculum that was based on Common Core, now has to pass a Common Core-based test, right? It sounds like it's a more rigorous test. Mm-hmm. They may not have been exposed to that material because the standards weren't in place when they were going through grades 4, 5, and 6. How are they to achieve success on that eighth grade test that is based on standards that weren't in place when they were being taught?
And the key thing about the Common Core standards is that they reflect the trajectory of performance you need to get to college and career readiness. Much better to know in eighth grade the gap between where students need to be and their current skills than to make that discovery when the student graduates and can't get a job or can't enroll in credit-bearing college courses. So the question is, do you want to identify students' needs, their academic needs, when there are parents and teachers and a school system there to support them? Or do you want to wait and have that student find when they leave high school that they're not ready? Wherever I go in the state, regardless of the unemployment level, I hear from employers the challenge of finding employees that they can hire because they can't find folks with the math skills, with the reading skills, with the writing skills that they need. And so the challenge is we understand that students who start kindergarten today will do better than the students who are in eighth grade today when they get to eighth grade. But the challenge is, how do we build a bridge between where our current eighth graders are and the expectations of the Common Core? How do we help students close that gap between where they are and the skills that they need to succeed when they graduate from high school? That's what we've got to do. In order to do that, we've got to have an accurate picture of student performance.
I don't think there's any question that more time on task is required, and that costs money. So after-school programs should become a permanent part of summer school. Has increased tenfold over the last 5 years, so that the amount of time devoted to instruction and assessment that the child is making or not making progress is something that has to be addressed not only by us but the governor and the legislature, because the time on task has to increase.
Longer school day, you're suggesting?
I would think so, absolutely.
Longer school year?
I would support that.
Commissioner King?
Absolutely. And we know that many of our highest need schools that are getting better outcomes for students do have a longer day and a longer school year.
Question from an educator from Buffalo in the audience. Rigor is a buzzword in education right now, yet the modules are scripted and allow for little teacher input. What, in your opinion, makes these modules rigorous? Yeah. Now, explain for folks who aren't educators, perhaps, what this person means by modules.
And modules describe curriculum materials that the state has made available as an optional resource. Again, this goes to the issue of misinformation. If you go to EngageNewYork.org, where we provide these free resources, the landing page literally says, these materials are not a script. What the materials are designed to do is to be a resource. So the materials describe in a lot of detail what it could look like in a classroom to implement these materials. But each individual teacher and each school district has to decide how best to implement those materials. And they've got to adapt those materials for their students. That's part of the New York State teaching standards, is the expectation that educators will adapt the materials to match their students' needs. And that's as true whether they're using the state's curriculum modules or curriculum materials that their district has selected or developed. Whatever the materials are, the challenge for every teacher is to adapt them to meet the needs of his or her students.
And they have that flexibility, you believe?
Well, there's no question. Curriculum decisions are made locally. Now, if a teacher feels like the message from the district is to do scripted instruction, that's a conversation the teacher should have with the district about the instructional approach. The materials are there, again, as a resource. For example, in the math materials reflect the Common Core. They require a lot more problem solving than was typically done in American schools prior to the Common Core. But there are more activities, more exercises than you can probably get to. And so you've got to make a decision which exercises to do, which to assign for homework, and which you might skip. That's a resource. And again, it's got to be adapted to meet the needs of the students.
Another question from a parent regarding learning standards. Commissioner King mentioned access to resources regarding the learning standards available to homeschooling families. How do they access them?
If they go to engageny.org, there's a set of curriculum materials, as I described. They can access the standards themselves. They can access videos of instruction that reflects the Common Core happening in classrooms around the state. And there's also a parent resource page with links to lots of other resources that are being provided by the National PTA and other organizations.
You are listening to right now Education Conversation, an update on Regents Reform. And we are with State Education Commissioner John King and Regents Chancellor Emeritus Robert Bennett, live from the WNED WBFO studios. We have about 15 or 20 minutes left in our program, and we are continuing to take questions from our audience here tonight. A question that really goes to kind of the heart or the basics of Common Core, which we described as we began the program tonight, as trying to get students college and career ready. In your opinion, what does that mean to be college and career ready?
Well, there are a variety of domains of college and career readiness. So one domain is, do you have the academic skills to enroll in credit-bearing college coursework? In other words, do you have the reading skills, the writing skills, the math skills to succeed in credit-bearing college coursework? So that's one domain, academic skills, and you need a set of background knowledge and skills for history and for science and so forth. So that's one domain. A second domain is around what sometimes people refer to as non-cognitive skills, but things like perseverance, grit, determination, the ability to work well in teams, the ability to do problem solving, the ability to advocate for yourself when you don't understand something or you're struggling in class. Do you know how to get the professor's attention so you can get additional support? Will you go to the writing center and get help to improve your writing? Those non-cognitive skills are critical. Now, they can be developed in an academic context, right? When you assign a research paper to students that they work on over time, they learn perseverance. They learn how to work on something and improve it over time. But those non-cognitive skills can also be developed in lots of other contexts. Could be a sport, could be arts, could be community service. So there are a variety of places where you might develop those skills, not to mention home and activities you might engage in outside of school. And then there's a third domain, which I think we under-attend to, which is knowledge about the opportunities that are available after school. Knowledge about career possibilities, knowledge about the college process. For example, if you talk to a student who hasn't had a lot of exposure to career knowledge and you say, who works in a hospital? The student will tell you, doctors and nurses. But actually, there are a lot more jobs than that in a hospital. There are pharmacists. There are x-ray technicians. You don't have to like working with blood to work in a hospital. And so it's important that, particularly for our highest need students, that they get that exposure to the range of possibilities. And so all of those domains have to be tackled for college and career readiness. The academic knowledge and skills, the non-cognitive, like perseverance and grit and so forth, as well as the career knowledge, the knowledge of what's possible after school.
I would say that ACHIEVE, which is a national organization, has come to some serious definitions about career ready, as have most employers. They know exactly what career ready is for them. And we have had the benefit of a Harvard-Cornell study on 13 pathways in careers and the appropriate assessments that employers require in order to be employed by a particular company. The basics in Career Ready would be that the student or the applicant, in this case, has a learning capacity and understands what learning is and means, that they know how to analyze problems when they see them and can tackle them either by themselves or in a team, which leads to the ability to work in a team, which a lot of career programs already require, the ability to listen and listen carefully and wait your turn in terms of when you speak or don't speak, the ability to be supervised or to supervise, and also the ability to write very clearly and persuasively and to think and to have a very strong work ethic, that the soft skills, as they say, that it's you have to be there on time every day. And the moment that you're late three or four times, you're not going to stay in that employer. And quite frankly, applications for employment these days, a lot of them are online, and they are, in fact, a form of a test.
A few more minutes left. I want to get as many questions in as we can. A parent in Buffalo asks, are all the teachers in Buffalo Public School District trained for Common Core standards?
They should all have been trained, given that the standards were adopted in 2010. But districts make the decisions about training, and the decisions about how much time is available for professional development are made by districts together with their bargaining units. So each district's leadership would have to answer the question, what training have they provided on the Common Core? What supports have they provided? Some of our districts delegate that decision making to principals and building level school-based management teams. So that may be a question to ask of the school-based management team, the principal, the teachers, the parents who might be involved in that school-based management team. So that's a question for Buffalo, but the right question to ask.
And what would that training look like? What would it typically involve? I know you've talked about, you know, the professional development, things like that. But what kind of training have teachers received before they hit the classroom with these new standards?
Yeah. So it's a range of things. Part of it is about content knowledge, right? In the early grades, how much do you know about early literacy and how students develop reading skills? Chancellor Meredith talked about math preparation for elementary school teachers. One of the worries we have is that some of our teacher preparation programs have under-attended to math knowledge. Do you understand the math conceptually so that you can convey the conceptual knowledge to your students and help them see math in a problem-solving context? So content knowledge is part of the professional development. Pedagogical content knowledge. So how do I teach this? How do I teach fractions most effectively? How do I teach number sense to students in early grades? How do I best teach algebra and help students see algebra not as purely theoretical, but algebra as something that has real-world applications? That pedagogical content knowledge can range from how to design a project that will help students apply their research skills to something as simple as when a student's answering a question about a text, does the teacher ask the follow-up question, how do you know? What page did you see it on? Where did the author tell us that in the text? Can you take us to that page? Right, so there's a range of skills that might be a part of that professional development, and the professional development can't be one shot. It can't be come to this workshop, and we're going to tell you about the Common Core, and then you're good to go.
It's ongoing.
It's an ongoing process, and it's not a one-year process. It's a multi-year process. There's got to be embedded coaching and support. The principal's got to observe and give feedback on that Common Core implementation. Teachers have to have the opportunity to be in each other's classrooms just to talk about, to see each other in action, and then to talk about what they've seen, to look at student work together and talk about how they can best meet their students' needs. And again, that requires districts and bargaining units to be thoughtful about the design of the schedule, the time that's provided, whether it's in the summer or during the school day or after school.
The network teams that were established under Race to the Top are throughout the state. Some are located at BOCES, some in districts themselves, where there are a variety of people, all experienced teachers, that will give samples of how to teach to a learning standard, at what grade level, which set of learning standards here, and then produce videos and then have teachers teaching teachers about how they did it in their classroom and then have students react and take a look at student work. And that is absolutely an ongoing enterprise, and we are benefiting from probably the leader in the whole state in Kate in terms of her ability to travel the state and do those lessons. And they are half-day sessions. In some cases, they're 2 or 3 days long. And I know in the case of my districts in Western New York, many of them have gone to Albany. We've had about 40 such sessions over the last 2 years.
Another question from a parent in Buffalo. Why do you think different stakeholders, parents, teachers, and students are opposing Common Core at the same time?
Look, any change effort is going to have opponents. And, you know, when you look at the Common Core, you've got 45 states, District of Columbia, Department of Defense schools, higher education leaders, business leaders, educators in all of those states have come together around the Common Core. In New York, the Educational Conference Board, which is comprised of the state teachers unions, the state superintendents, the state school administrators, the state PTA, the state school business officials, all recently reaffirmed their commitment to the Common Core. Now, are there disagreements about aspects of implementation? Of course. What change effort doesn't have those disagreements? But the suggestion that because some are opposed means that everyone's opposed, that's just not factual. You have actually the country coming together for the first time about the urgent need to ensure students are prepared for college and careers. You have, for the first time, presidents of higher ed institutions in every state coming together with K-12 educators, with the AFT, with the NEA, all in support of the Common Core standards. You have governors from both parties who are strongly supporting the work on the standards. Again, are there concerns? Absolutely. Are there challenges? Absolutely. Are there some opposing voices? Sure. Some who would call for lower standards and lower expectations? Sure. But we still have a very strong consensus across the country around these standards, and we've got to keep our shoulders to the wheel to keep the work moving forward.
I think Senator Flanagan, when he had his hearing here, asked us to differentiate between and among the learning standards that have been adopted, pre-K to 12 in New York State, the testing regimen that is based on those standards, and all tests heretofore should be, and teacher evaluation. Those are three very distinct initiatives. The last one is a state law that requires certain components, 60-20-20, as the commissioner mentioned, in terms of teacher evaluation. The amount of testing that is given at the local level is a local decision and likely will remain such. The number of state assessments that have been given has remained constant. So I think clarifying that as the debate and worry and frustration continues is a responsibility of the Board of Regents and the commissioner and the governor and the legislature, and we tend to do that. I think what we want to try to do, and we will do, is identify the districts that are well down the road in terms of their teachers having benefited from professional development and their students being taught to the learning standards and not stressing out so much about the test that looms in April.
Question from a parent in Williamsville. Dr. King, I realize you do not agree with much of the criticism that has been directed at state ed, the excessive testing and the Common Core curriculum, but have you heard some valid criticisms with which you can agree? And what, if anything, have you taken to heart after this listening tour?
Well, as I described earlier, we're always interested in making thoughtful adjustments that are in the interests of students. So one of the concerns we've heard, as I think I mentioned earlier, is around students with disabilities and whether or not we might find a way with the U.S. Department of Education to adjust our assessment policies for students with very significant disabilities so that they might take assessments at their instructional level rather than their chronological age. I mentioned earlier that we've heard concerns about the length of the state tests, even though the state tests are less than 1% of the instructional time. Concerned about the length, and we've tried over the last 2 years to reduce the length of the state tests, to reduce the number of items and reduce the testing time. Go ahead.
I think we've also heard about English language learners, and our waiver request to the federal government reflects that. That was a criticism, it was a frustration, and saying that we should offer assessments in their native language and extend the time for which they can be prepared to fully integrate into our American society.
We've had certainly questions about, and we've heard them tonight, the need for more professional development, the need for more opportunity at the local level for teachers to have time to collaborate and plan together. And that's something we've supported with the resources that we have, and we're going to talk with the governor and the legislature about how we might identify additional resources to support that professional development. But it's important to note that many of the concerns we hear are about local decisions, about assessments that were locally decided upon by districts and their bargaining units or by districts themselves. So many of the concerns, for example, that we hear about K-2 assessment, we don't give K-2 tests. So those are local decisions. We want to work with districts. One thing the Board of Regents has discussed is a grant program that we'll initiate in the new year that will provide funding for districts to review all the assessments they give and make thoughtful adjustments to ensure that they have the minimum number of assessments necessary to inform good decision making.
Beyond what you said there in terms of perhaps doing more with staff development and things like that, is there anything that is part of the standards right now that, based on what you've seen, based on what you've heard, that you would recommend be changed, that you recommend be dropped from the current standards?
Well, to the extent that there are people who are saying we should do less problem solving in math, they're wrong. Students need to do more problem solving. They need to better understand the math concepts, and the recent PISA results reemphasize that once again. To the extent that people are saying we should ask students to read less, That's wrong. We need students to read more and to read across a broad range of genres and to read texts that challenge them to think critically. To the extent that people are saying that we should ask students to write less, they're wrong. Students need to build their writing skills. They need to be able to write across the curriculum. So, you know, I think we've got to distinguish between listening and disagreement. We listen carefully to the concerns, but we also have a strong view that we've got to ensure that our students are prepared for college and career success. Now, if people want to use different curriculum materials from the ones that the state has provided, they're free to do that. Will we continue to refine the materials that we're providing? Absolutely. Will we continue to add additional scaffolding and support for students with disabilities and English language learners and students who are overage undercredited? Absolutely. But we're absolutely committed to the work on the Common Core. There's always going to be those who would oppose higher standards, but we know the higher standards are necessary for our students to be prepared to compete in the 21st century.
And as we learn more about the implementation of the standards in various classrooms around the state, and possibly additional standards or a tweak in a standard here or there for whatever grade level, we're open to that. We have systems in place to do that with the Professional Standards and Practices Board. Forever visiting schools. I visit a lot of schools. All my colleagues visit a lot of schools. The commissioner, 50 schools in the last year. So listening to students, listening to teachers.
Since September.
Since September. Oh, mm-hmm. Goodness. So I think this is an ongoing evolution where the bottom line is we want kids to perform better and be ready to support a family and get gainful employment, because even a high school graduate alone will not be able to support a family of four in the long term in this economy.
Well, let me ask you this then. Can these reforms succeed, in your opinion, without the support of everyone? Because it appears right now you don't have support of everyone. There's still great concern. There's still opposition out there, and it may take time for everyone to get on that page. But if that doesn't happen, can this succeed without parents, teachers, administrators, everyone in support?
I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any initiative in the history of the country that had the support of every single person. So is every single teacher going to be excited about the Common Core? No, that's probably not possible. There's probably no set of standards that could get 100% absolute agreement. But we do know, there was just a poll done recently of teachers across the country that showed 75% of teachers believe the Common Core will translate into better outcomes for students. Support in New York State across stakeholder groups for the Common Core is very strong. Now, are there things where people would change implementation? Are there disagreements between labor and management, for example, around aspects of the evaluation system? Of course. Those things are inevitable. But as a country, when we know that when we've had difficult things to do as a country, we've set our expectations high and we've set our aspirations high and we've come together around them, I think the Common Core presents that kind of opportunity.
I know you're meeting next week with the State Board of Regents in Albany. I believe you're wrapping up your tour of New York State. In the minute or so that we have left, what will your message be to the Board of Regents about what you've learned, what you've heard on this tour? What are you going to tell them?
I'll talk about the great things I've seen in classrooms as I visited those 50 schools. I'll talk about the parents who are at forums this week, talking about how much they want higher standards for their kids, how much they fear that if we don't have higher standards, their kids will have the experience they did of graduating from high school and ending up in remedial courses. I'll talk about the concerns that we've heard, whether it's about assessment policy for students with disabilities or English language learners, or how we might support districts in making better decisions about local assessments. We'll talk about adjustments that we can make at the state level and adjustments that districts and their bargaining units can make to their evaluation agreements, to their local assessment policies, to how time is used at the local level. And we'll talk about the legislative session that's upcoming, some of the initiatives that we've put forward, and the state aid proposal, and the need for resources, particularly for our highest needs districts, and the need to expand our investment in professional development.
I'm going to ask my colleagues to support the creation of parent helplines throughout the entire state of New York in every single district. Because without parents, this will not succeed.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time here tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That will bring our radio broadcast to an end this evening. We want to thank Commissioner John King and Regents Chancellor Emeritus Robert Bennett for joining us. We also thank Samuel Ratchford of the District Parenting Coordinating Council of Buffalo and everyone here in our studio audience, in our radio audience as well. And we thank you for listening tonight. I'm Jim Ranney. Good night.